Do you ever get the feeling that some people, as well as some Christians, expect Christians to be perfect? In Matthew 7 there, we just had read in verses 1 and 2, Jesus said, "Do not judge so that you will not be judged." And this is a verse that is often quoted to us when we are condemning some action of some individual, and they feel like we don't have the right to judge that. But they fail to go on to verse 2, which says, "For in the way you judge, you will be judged, and by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you." Luke also records this in chapter 6 and verse 37. "Do not judge and you will not be judged, and do not condemn and you will not be condemned. Pardon and you will be pardoned." And John records this in chapter 7 and verse 24. "Do not judge according to appearance, but judge with righteous judgment." I do think that there are a number of individuals that expect Christians to be perfect. That they hope, and not that we shouldn't be held to a higher standard, because we do hold to a higher standard. But to expect perfection from us is beyond what we have already failed to accomplish. What if you were listening to a group of Christians talk about how bad a father Abraham was? You know, he committed that thing with Hagar in Genesis 16, and I know that his wife was encouraging him in that, but he still did this. And isn't he just wrong in doing that? I would ask them, what do you think God says about it? In Genesis 18 and in verse 19, God says, "For I have chosen him so that he may command his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice, so that the Lord may bring upon Abraham what he has spoken about him." God didn't say he wasn't wrong in doing what he did, but God still recognizes him as one who would lead his spouse in a way that would be in righteousness and justice. And then he went and offered Isaac in Genesis 22. It's hard to even comprehend that idea of taking your son. Wouldn't you have said, "Lord, surely we can do something different"? But the Hebrew writer in Hebrews 11 and verses 17 through 19 says, "By faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. It was he whom he was said, 'In Isaac your descendants shall be called.' He considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, from which he also received him back as a type of Christ." What if you heard them saying, "Oh, can you even imagine what a terrible father Lot was? Why would he choose to live in Sodom? Why, that's just insane. It's just really a bad idea, because these are very wicked people." And then you think about that situation with his daughters in Genesis 19, verses 30 through 38. They committed incest with their father, and two nations are born out of this. But I have to ask, what did God say about Lot? in 2 Peter 2 and verse 7. 2 Peter 2 and verse 7, Peter writes, "And if he rescued righteous Lot, oppressed by the sensual conduct of unprincipled men, for by what he saw and heard, that righteous man, while living among them, felt his righteous soul tormented day after day by their lawless deeds, then the Lord knows how to rescue the godly from temptation and to keep the unrighteous under punishment for the day of judgment." Did you notice that in these two, in this verse, that Lot is referred to righteous three times? What if that group of Christians were saying, "Do you remember how bad a dad David was? Remember that situation in 2 Samuel 11 with Bathsheba when he commits adultery and then to try and cover it up, he commits murder? What a horrible dad." And then in 2 Samuel 13, there's that problem with Tamar and Ammon. And David's angry, we know from 2 Samuel 13 and verse 21, but he doesn't deal with Ammon. But then later, 2 years later about, from what the text says, Absalom gets his revenge on Ammon, doesn't he, and kills him. And David doesn't do anything to Absalom, does he? What kind of a father is David if he does these kind of things? But we know that God says of David that he's a man after his own heart. In Hebrews 11 and verse 13, the Hebrew writer says, "All these died in faith without receiving the promises, but having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth." No, those men were not perfect. They had some terrible sins in their lives. They had some terrible failures in their lives. But they were still considered by God righteous because of their faith and their trust in Him. I think our society has influenced Christians' thinking too much. At some time, some Christians think that other Christians should be perfect on the whole. People of the world often think this way. But we need to understand no one is perfect but God. In Luke 18 and verse 19, Jesus said to him, "Why do you call me good? No one is good except God alone." And in Romans 3 and verse 23, Paul declares that all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. There is no perfect individual. We have all failed. Some years ago, I knew an individual who had committed some pretty bad sin. I cared about that person. I still care about that person. And I sent a message to them that they needed to make their life right with God. And it pains me that they used their children to rebuke me rather than personally rebuking me. One of those children said to me that their mother told them that if you can't say anything nice, you should say nothing at all. And the question that stands out in my mind is, how was what I said not nice? How was it not concerning? Kind of makes me think about class this morning. In a text, you can't really understand the emotions or the feelings of the one texting you or writing to you. It can be misconstrued. In fact, two of those children wrote me and said, if you have sinned, be encouraged to get right with God is a good thing. I'm sorry, that's not what they said. This is what I was thinking. If you have sinned, then being encouraged to get right with God is a good thing. Where would saying nothing put me in my relationship with God? Where would be being silent and not encouraging this person to correct their life, where would that put me with God? Well, in Matthew 18 and verse 15, Jesus says, if your brother sins, go and show him his fault in private. If he listens to you, you have won your brother. It wasn't a public message I sent. It was a private message. In Luke 17 and verse 3, Jesus says, be on your guard. If your brother sins, rebuke him. If he repents, forgive him. I certainly was willing to forgive. I wanted to see this individual repent and make their life right with God. Paul, writing to the Galatians in Galatians 6 and verses 1 and 2, says, brethren, even if anyone is caught in a trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself so that you too will not be tempted. Bear one another's burdens and thereby fulfill the law of Christ. I want you to notice what Paul's saying in this passage. If your brother, if your sister is caught in trespass, you who are spiritual, not perfect, spiritual, restore them in the spirit of gentleness, realizing you too can sin and be tempted. And in so doing, you are bearing one another's burdens and fulfilling the law of Christ. It's loving them. It's about loving them, isn't it? As I was saying, two of those children didn't allow the argument to stop there, but went forward with the idea, you shouldn't say anything because of this particular sin in your life. You've committed terrible sins too. In fact, people who know you need to know about this sin in your life. You ought to be exposed. Well, the sad thing is, these children, and in fact their parent, probably were not even alive. I know the children weren't, and I'm not sure that the parent was alive when that particular sin or sins took place. It was some 50 years prior. And people did know. People did know. At that time, they were very much aware of the sin I was involved in. And yes, I understand that I'm a sinner. I know that Romans 3 and verse 23 applies to me. And I understand from Matthew 7 and verses 1 through 5 that I need to remove the log that is in my eye before I tried to take the speck out of someone else's. I know I'm not perfect, and I did not correct, and I did correct the sins that I was involved in 50 years ago. The people I confessed it to know. I went before the congregation I was with at the time and confessed it to them. But you know what? God does not require any of us to keep confessing sins of the past with every new congregation we become a part of, or with each new Christian that we have come into our lives. is truly sad. It's a sad thing that I see in trying to excuse oneself's sin by inferring or referring to another's sin. The truth is, that won't work with God. In fact, it flies in the very face of what Matthew 7, verses 1 through 5 say. If you think for any amount of moments that I'm perfect in any way, you have failed to discern things correctly. There's not a person in this building, there's not a person in the community, there's not a person in this world outside of little children that are without sin. Romans 3 and verse 23 applies to every one of us. And me coming to you or someone else coming to you and telling you that there's a sin in your life and you need to correct it is the appropriate thing to do in gentleness, right? In gentleness, recognizing that we too can be tempted and give in to sin. And I think it's really important for us to recognize that. If I came to you and told you you needed to correct some sin, it would not be because I thought I was better than you or that I was perfect in some way, because I've already failed. I've failed multiple times. And as I look back on my life, and some of those failures haunt me yet to this day. And I'm sure that you may have some sins in your life that still haunt you as well. And I keep, and maybe you do too, trying to push them back farther in my mind. But the way my mind works, it just doesn't allow it to stay there. Sometimes it comes back. What's sad is when other Christians have to bring those sins of 50 years ago up and throw them in our face because they've been found guilty of sin. That's a judgment that God's going to hold them accountable for. I want to see them forgiven. I want to see them correct their lives. I want to see them in a right relationship with God. Don't you? I'm sure you do. Absolutely. That's what we want for all of these individuals. You know, I will never be perfect because I failed over 60 years ago. Maybe, yeah, pretty close to 60 years ago. But what I can be and what I need to be is spiritual. Look again at Galatians 6. Brethren, even if anyone is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, that's me, that's you, restore such a one in the spirit of gentleness, caring about that individual, wanting them to be right, and you are going to be accused. You're going to be condemned, but doing what God says is always the right thing to do. And God says through the hand of the Apostle Paul here in Galatians 6 in verses 1 and 2, that if you know someone who has been caught in a trespass, who has sinned, and sin is in their lives, those who are spiritual need to go to that individual and restore them in the spirit of gentleness, recognizing that they can be tempted as well and give in to sin. we should never judge another person based upon what we think we know. We should always judge a person with righteous judgment. We should base our judgment on that which is right and righteous and godly, not on our opinions, not because we got caught, but upon what's right. Think about it for a moment. Consider the number of times Peter failed. Peter was not perfect. Peter had numerous failures, didn't he? And I have to ask the question, what was the difference between Peter and Judas? Do you ever think about that? What was the difference between Peter and Judas? Judas turned Jesus over to the persecutors, right? Peter denied Jesus 3 times. What was different? What was different between these two individuals? Peter never quit. Judas gave up. That's the difference. You cannot quit in sin. You cannot quit in sin. I think this is also true of Abraham. It's true of Lot. It's true of David. It's true of everyone who ever was or will be right with God. You can't quit in sin. You cannot give up there. You see, what I see in David and Lot and Abraham and Peter was the thing that they soldiered on. They soldiered on. And we need to do the same. The idea that a Christian should be perfect can drive people to give up. In Luke 9 and verse 42, whoever causes one of these little ones who believes to stumble, it would be better for him if with a heavy millstone hung around his neck, he had been drowned or been cast into the sea. When my accusations against an individual because of some sin that was in their life causes them to quit and to give up, I think that this passage applies to me. Because when I cause someone to give up on Jesus, it would be better that I had never been born. In Matthew, the 18th chapter, beginning at verse 6, we read what Jesus says here. Whoever then humbles himself as this child, he is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever receives one such child in my name receives me. But whoever causes one of these little ones who believed in me to stumble, it would be better for him to have a heavy millstone hung around his neck and to be drowned in the depth of the sea. Woe to the world because of his stumbling blocks. For it is inevitable that stumbling blocks will come, but woe to that man through whom the stumbling block comes. If your hand or your foot causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it from you. It is better for you to enter life crippled or lame than to have 2 hands or 2 feet and be cast into eternal fire. If your eye causes you to stumble, pluck it out and throw it from you. it is better for you to enter life with one eye than to have two eyes and to be cast into the fiery hell. See that you do not despise one of these little ones, for I say to you that their angels in heaven continually see the face of my Father who is in heaven. For the Son of Man has come to save that which was lost. Why do you think if a man has 100 sheep and one of them has gone astray, does he not leave the 99 on the mountain and go and search for the one that is straying? If it turns out that he finds it, truly I say to you, he will rejoice over it more than over the 99 which have not gone astray. So it is not the will of your Father who is in heaven that one of these little ones perish. Think about it. Our words can destroy lives, or they can build them up. Which do I want to be known for? Do I want to inflict judgment upon individuals? Do I want to condemn them because that makes me better than them? I often think about this situation with these individuals in my life. It grieves me deeply that their souls are in danger of eternal destruction. It grieves me because they have opportunity. They know the Scriptures. They know what's right. But they've chosen to do something else and condemned others for pointing out their need to change. I pray not one of us, at least as I know you, have ever been or will be in that situation. I want you to think about something today. What if God expected perfection out of you? What if God expected you to be perfect? The sad thing is, I've already failed. You've already failed. What are we going to do now? Friends, that's why Jesus came. That's why Jesus came. He came because we failed. He died because we failed. He shed His blood because we failed. It's through His blood that we are cleansed. Not one of us is perfect. But we can be cleansed through the blood of Jesus Christ. We just got to be willing. We just have to be willing to submit to His will. If you need to correct your life in any way this morning, we would encourage you to do it now. There may not be another opportunity. James says in chapter 4 and verse 14 that our life is like a vapor that appeared for a little while and vanishes away. There's not a one of us that knows when that appointment with death will arrive. But we do know it will arrive. And the only thing that's going to matter at that point in time, the only thing that's going to matter is, am I right with Jesus? If you're not right with Jesus, won't you come as we stand and sing?